The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A fifth of all of humanity speaks, writes, thinks, and prays in the language born on these isles and perfected in the pages of Shakespeare and Dickens and Tolkien, Lewis, Orwell, and Kipling. Incredible people, unbelievable people like we have rarely seen before, probably won't see again. The lion-hearted people of this kingdom defeated Napoleon, unleashed the Industrial Revolution, destroyed slavery, and defended civilization in the darkest days of fascism and communism. The British gave the world the Magna Carta, the modern parliament, and Francis Bacon's scientific method. They gave us the works of Locke, and Hobbes, Smith, and Burke, Newton, and Blackstone, the legal, intellectual, cultural, and political traditions of this kingdom. Have been among the highest achievements of mankind. There's really never been anything like it. The British Empire laid the foundations of law, liberty, free speech, and individual rights virtually everywhere the Union Jack has ever flown, including a place called America. You know that place very well, don't you? His Majesty spoke eloquently about the bond which inspired Sir Winston Churchill, and the bust is in the Oval Office right now, the beautiful bust of Winston Churchill, to coin the phrase special relationship. But seen from American eyes, the word special does not begin to do it justice. We're joined by history and fate, and by love and language, and by transcendent ties of culture, tradition, ancestry, and destiny. We're like two notes in one chord, or two verses of the same poem, each beautiful on its own, but really meant to be played together. The bond of kinship and identity between America and the United Kingdom is priceless and eternal. It's irreplaceable and unbreakable. And we are, as a country, as you know, doing unbelievably well. We had a very sick country 1 year ago, and today, I believe we're the hottest country anywhere in the world. In fact, nobody's even questioning it, but we owe so much of that to you and the footing that you gave us when we started. Together, we've done more good for humanity than any two countries in all of history. Together, we must defend the exceptional heritage that makes us who we are, and we must continue to stand for the values and the people of the English speaking world, and we do indeed stand for that. On behalf of all Americans, I offer a toast to one of the great friendships, to two great countries, and to His Majesty King Charles III, a very, very special man, and also a very, very special queen. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be with you.
This historic second state visit is a moment to celebrate the unique bond between our two countries. But today we've gone far beyond that. We've renewed the special relationship for a new era. The United Kingdom and the United States stand together today as first partners on defence, first partners in trade with the groundbreaking deal we struck in May, and now with the new agreement that we've just signed this afternoon, we're confirming our status as the first partners in science and technology, ready to define this century together, just as we did the last.
As I said last night, the bond between our countries is like no other anywhere in the world. The United States and the United Kingdom have done more good on this planet than any two nations in human history. That is thanks in large part to the traditions of British liberty, which grew up on these isles, these beautiful, magnificent isles. and were carried by our ancestors to the new world. We're forever joined, and we are forever friends, and we will always be friends.
With all that's happening here in the United States, President Trump's trip to the UK this week hasn't probably gotten the attention it deserves, but it's pretty inspiring. I mean, to see how well received, I mean, they've received President Trump like a king, basically. And then to see this, given what's happening to both nations, really both of them on the verge of civil war, and here we have a blast from the past, our history, this special relationship, all of those blessings that God bestowed upon our peoples because of a covenant or a promise he made to Abraham so many thousands of years ago. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. I was about to say the last show of the week, but it's only Thursday. We've got more coming up tomorrow. All week, by the way. I've been telling Sam I've got so much notes. It's going to be great tomorrow. I'll be able to take a break. I can just use the back half of my notes that I didn't use yesterday. And then as it happens, I get into the news and you see so many new developments and such, and then the old notes just keep getting pushed back. I will, at some point, get to Charlie Kirk and his family being Sabbath keepers. I think that will open the way to a nice Bible study, just looking at what God says about that. But this trip, President Trump going to the UK, and you see he has a special affinity for the royal family. And we know a lot of things have not gone well for the royal family in recent years. My father wrote about this in the New Throne of David booklet back in 2017. But that said, I mean, it is glorious history. And this is history that the dear leader and others like him are ashamed of. Or really, they've tried to stamp it out. They've tried to blot it out. But here is a Jeroboam king showing up in the UK. And we see this perhaps the biggest display of royal pageantry in the UK since King Charles was coronated some years ago. It's amazing to see. And as President Trump has said, there's no nation on earth that can put on the pomp. And I mean, look at that table they were sitting at. That's glorious. You think about what it's going to be like in God's royal family. I mean, this is just a tiny, tiny type of what awaits the royal bride of Jesus Christ. It's exciting to think about. We had an article in the Trumpet 3 years ago. Britain and the U.S. will lead the world again. I mean, we're seeing our nations just being pounded by curses. And I'll get to more on Charlie Kirk, and just as a couple of articles bring out, it's not so much that, you know, America hasn't witnessed political assassinations in its history. It has happened before. It's happened a long time ago. But when you look at the reaction today and you see the two sides, I mean, even the dear leader has come out and basically he's blaming it on Trump. And if you could believe it, Barack Obama said, you know what, when I was in the White House, we didn't have any extreme views. That man, as soon as there was any kind of racially charged confrontation, that man rushed to the microphone to tell you that, well, law enforcement's racist or whatever it was. I mean, it just happened over and again. They were hunting down police officers during his administration. The dear leader. There has never been a U.S. president that has caused more division and strife in America than Barack Hussein Obama. And so to listen to him talk about how peaceful and how his views were not extreme at all. No, he was a uniter. No, nice try. You're actually the divider in chief. But let's focus on the positive, shall we? You know, you have to work hard, given what we cover on this program. Sometimes you have to search far and wide to find a positive story. And here is one. God, it's as if God is reminding us of this glimmer of history, this glorious history that is there because of God, because of promises God made. You go right back to Genesis 12. I mean, God is just showing us from every direction who we are, who the lost tribes of Israel are today. And of course, you can understand this truth if you're willing to study the United States and Britain in prophecy. It's somewhere here on the table. I've talked about Mystery of the Ages over the last couple of weeks. The U.S. and Britain in prophecy, this was mailed to more than 6 million households worldwide during Mr. Armstrong's ministry. And we have it today because we fought for it. We fought for it. There were evildoers that wanted to blot it out and bury the truth. And we listened to a forum this morning, a sermon my father gave 25 years ago. And he said he was not, that was right as we heard the Ninth Circuit in Southern California ruled against us in the Mystery of the Ages case. And he said, you know, I had to encourage our lawyers and let them know we're going to fight this to the bitter end. We're not going to let them steal this book or these books. And you look back on it today, 25 years on, and I mean, that's inspiring history. You've got to fight for the truth. Otherwise, the devil will come and just take it away. He'll bury it. He'll blot it out. The truth about Barack Obama, I mean, that's in America Under Attack. Here he was weaponizing all these agencies, targeting conservatives, whether it was from the IRS or the DOJ. And now he has the arrogance. I mean, he must think we're stupid, that we don't remember anything. But that's just like the devil, isn't it? I mean, he could go about causing division and strife and violence and murder and then sit down and say, you know what? One thing about me and my White House, I was a peacemaker. Oh, yes. Darkness is descending on the long, historically extraordinary Anglo-American age. As I say, this was at the trumpet 3 years ago. Britain's empire, commonwealth, and throne are gone or deteriorating fast. The American superpower is suffering a cultural revolution and staring into the economic abyss. It says history teaches that world orders don't last. They come and they go. This present one is giving way to something very different, and it truly will be the world's loss. That's right, because the United States and Britain, back in the day, I mean, they brought a lot of good to this world. It doesn't mean they were perfect. But look at the British Empire as one example. Look at the civility and the government and the educational system that they spread into regions of this world that were ruled by barbarians. The British and Americans long believed they were duty-bound, even destined, to lead the world. Where did they get this thinking? Where do you suppose it came from? This is why our history is so important. And we've been going back and looking at our history from this little church the last 25, 30 years. And it's inspiring to see young people, 19, 20 years of age, learn more deeply about history that happened before they were even born. And as I've tried to tell them, you know, you're a part of it. You're an extension of it. Your parents fought through this. Your parents, they've got a working memory of some of these events. And I do too, but I mean, sometimes even that gets a little hazy as you get older. And you go back and you look at the history and you think, I need to review this. Our nations need to review America's history, Britain's history, and maybe coming into America's birthday next year, 250 years. Maybe that'll get us to ask some hard questions. What has happened? It seems like God really is trying to come at us from a lot of different directions, as I say, to just get us to look at ourselves. I mean, even what I've been getting into this week with respect to the religious revival and, you know, Charlie Kirk out there just boldly saying, we need to talk more about repentance. We need to look at John 8 and verse 44. We need to acknowledge there's a real spirit world. You are of your father, the devil, who is a murderer and a liar from the beginning. That's what Jesus said to religious people of his day. And as Charlie Kirk said at that service he was in a few years back, that's a big statement. What does this mean? What does this mean for us today if that's what Jesus said 2,000 years ago? Britain dominated the 1800s and the early 1900s. America has dominated since. Both were imperfect, but both produced far more good than bad when compared to other great powers. That's just the truth. That is the truth. And more people should be saying it. Bible prophecy reveals that there is an awesome reason for this, one that points back to ancient history and yet illuminates an inspiring future. Yes, the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. I mean, it's a sobering warning, yes, but it's also just such a hope-filled vision. What does the title say? Britain and the U.S. will lead the world again. Listen to King Charles from last night as he toasts the President of the United States at that state dinner in the UK, clip 18.
Mr. President, this is Trump. It is with great pleasure that my wife and I welcome you to Windsor Castle on this, your second state visit to the United Kingdom. This unique and important occasion reflects the enduring bond between our two great nations, anchored by the deep friendship between our people. This relationship, which, with good reason, we and our predecessors have long called special, has made us safer and stronger through the generations. Mr. President, as we approach the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence next year, it is remarkable to think just how far we have come. I cannot help but wonder what our forebears from 1776 would make of this friendship today. The ocean may still divide us, but in so many other ways, we are now the closest of kin. The bond between our two nations is indeed a remarkable one. Forged in the fire of conflict, it has been fortified through our shared endeavors and burnished by the deep affection between our people. Tested time and again, it has borne the weight of our common purpose and raised our ambition for a better world. So, in renewing our bond tonight, we do so with unshakable trust in our friendship and in our shared commitment to independence and liberty. Therefore, as we celebrate this unparalleled partnership, allow me to propose a toast to President Trump and the First Lady, and to the health, prosperity, and happiness of the people of the United States of America. Thank you very
much. Some powerful, powerful lessons here to think on. I mean, God uses you can read about this again in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, but he uses the promises of race to help us come to understand more deeply the promises of grace. He uses these physical promises to set our minds on the spiritual promises. He uses the old covenant to help us understand more deeply the new covenant. God's royal family is about to rule this earth, and you're going to see banquet halls and tables like you see there in that picture on a scale that is multiplied a million times over. Jesus Christ, you can read it in Revelation 17. Read it. He's coming back as King of Kings. Think about sitting around a banquet table like that one. Not just with a king and a president, but with thousands of kings. That's what's coming. That's what this world can hope for if they'll just set their minds on the Holy Scriptures and believe. President Trump is getting the royal treatment, it said at the New York Post. Now, this is also interesting in light of Amos 7, King Jeroboam. And by the way, this man, 4 years ago, I'm talking about Trump, was silenced. He was a political pariah. He belonged in jail, in prison. The opposition tried to assassinate him. And after that happened, did it restore order and civility to the political class in this country? No, it made things worse. And now we've got Charlie Kirk as a victim. And both sides continue to dig in their heels. This is the backdrop of all of that royal pomp and circumstance. That pageantry, the ceremony. We need to set our minds on the royalty of God's throne and his holy law, his royal law, as James said. Because this world is, this world's gasping for breath. This world is on life support. It's not going to last much longer. But coming back to Amos 7, Trump greeted by King, thousands of protesters in the UK visit. That's ABC News. There you have the contrast. He's greeted like a king. He's receiving this royal treatment. And then you've got all of the protesters there to say that he's Hitler. Oh, yes. King Donald comes to Great Britain. That's from Unheard, the website. King Donald. The English-born American founding father, Thomas Paine. Well, it just gives some history and how that Americans typically, they haven't really been into the royalty of Great Britain. That's what we broke free from. But it's not the case with this president. The current president of the United States is known to be a fan of the British monarchy. He paid a warm tribute to the late Queen Elizabeth II on her death in 2022. So today, as Donald Trump begins his first state visit since his presidential inauguration in January, everyone around Keir Starmer is hoping that a dose of royal pomp and ceremony will pour balm on a special relationship that has latterly looked more than a little threadbare, in large part because of the dear leader. He had a special hatred for the British Empire and for colonialism. That was a curse word to the dear leader. Send that bust of Winston Churchill back. Don't want it. Well, Donald Trump brought it back. And you get a little preview today or last night at that state dinner. You get a little tiny, tiny foretaste of what's coming to this earth. This morning, as you saw in the cold open, President Trump had some meetings with the British Prime Minister and then came out for some statements and a press conference thereafter. Here's Keir Starmer earlier today, clip 13.
While we shape this bond for a new era, the fundamentals have not changed. Security remains the cornerstone of this special relationship. We have the deepest, most advanced defence relationship in the world. Our warriors train together and they fight together. Our industries build together, everything from fast jets to the new AUKUS-class submarines. So now, as we drive up defence spending, we're going to sweep away the barriers to working together on new defence technologies so we can stay ahead of our adversaries. We're united in defence and security? Yes, absolutely. But we're also united in the pursuit of peace.
It was Winston Churchill all the way back in 1946, following World War II, that came out and said, you know, there's a special relationship between these two. There's been a special relationship historically between Britain, America, and little Judah in the Middle East. And we see that it's beginning to unravel. We see so much hatred. We see so much division. Why? Why is that? In the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, the book I just showed you, it says in Genesis 48, Jacob first passed the birthright on to the two sons of Joseph jointly, speaking of them both together. Then finally, he spoke of them separately. Manasseh was to become the single great nation, Ephraim, the company of nations. Prophecy, you see, all the way back to the book of Genesis, the book of beginnings. God laid it out for us. It says, you need to open your eyes to the fact that Britain's sun has already set. You need to wake up to the fact that the United States, even still possessing unmatched power, is afraid, fears to use it. Just as God said, I will break the pride of your power. I mean, these prophecies are also being fulfilled. God gave us all of these blessings, and now he's sending curses because of our sins. In my father's booklet on Hosea, the minor prophet, it says, Ephraim is joined to idols. I mean, well, it gets into the sins that we've had. And here again, you can receive inspiration from scenes like that state dinner last night. But then you come back home, you return from the visit, and then the reality sets in. Well, even during this visit, Donald Trump had some things to say about what happened here in the United States last week. This is clip 16.
Just last week, a great American, Charlie Kirk, was heinously assassinated for speaking his mind. He was a great young man, credible future. Some people said he might be president someday. I told him, I said, Charlie, I think you have a good shot someday at being president. And he just wanted to take care of youth. He loved youth. I've never seen anybody relate to youth like Charlie, and they related to him, and they're devastated. But I appreciate the many British citizens who have offered their condolences. And again, Charlie was a great person. We'll be going out to a service on Sunday. I'll be leaving with some of the people in this room just to celebrate Charlie and all that he's done. So incredible. Never seen anything like it.
That's going to be quite an event Sunday in Arizona. Hopefully there's a large security detail planned, given the climate that we're in politically. J.D. Vance was on Jesse Waters' show. I think this is from last night, clip 11.
He touched so many people, especially young people.
Yes.
And as a strong Christian, will that be part of his legacy, bringing people closer to God?
I think it has to be part of his legacy. I mean, how many people did I talk to in the last week who said, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I haven't been to church in 3 years, 3 months. I went to church this Sunday to pray for Charlie. Or how many people did I speak to who said, you know, I was kind of an agnostic, an atheist, but I'm kind of interested in this God thing because this guy really believed that he gave his life for it. If we are true to Charlie's memory, the number one thing that people will remember about Charlie Kirk is that he was a great advocate for the Christian faith. He was thoughtful. I mean, I remember talking to Charlie even in the last months before he died about Catholicism and Protestantism and all of these different minutiae of the Christian faith because, you know, I said this, he loved God, and because he loved God, he wanted to understand God. And so he was constantly thinking about it. But more importantly than that, he was constantly going out and talking about it. Like, you look at these Turning Points USA events and you look at the interactions he was having with people, and people would say, why are you a Christian? And he would say, well, because I'm a sinner and Jesus saved me. Jesus saved my life. He wanted to be a true evangelist in the truest sense of the word, in the way that St. Paul was an evangelist. And I think that has to be part of his legacy. And I've seen just in my own inner circle, people come back to the church purely because Charlie's death caused something inside them to stir. I would love to see that happen all over our country, and I think it is.
That's why it feels like it's a spiritual attack.
Yes.
That evil showed its face. Do you believe that evil is out there and we have to confront it?
You know, I've always believed that history makes a lot more sense when you both believe in God and follow God, but accept that the devil is real. And I think that evil is very much a real thing. It has a will. It has an evil and very negative purpose, but it also clearly has people who are trying to accomplish that purpose. I think in the spiritual realm, but also in the realm that we live in every single day too. So yes, I believe that one of the takeaways of Charlie's death and of Charlie's life is that speaking the truth, what is the devil? What is evil if not the opposite of truth and the opposite of life? They tried to extinguish Charlie's truth and extinguish Charlie's life. We cannot let them.
One of the most popular news shows on TV. Isn't it amazing what's now in the national conversation? There is a real spirit world. The devil exists. We're in the midst of a spiritual war. I mean, this represents an opportunity for God's work. Because, as you know, we have answers to life's great mysteries. Take it a step further. If the devil and his demons exist, why? And what's the purpose of that? When does it end? And how will it end? How does this evil ultimately, how is it defeated? All those answers are in Mystery of the Ages. That's right. There are a lot of positive messages that we can zero in on, even in the midst of so much violence and division. Jonathan Tobin at JNS. The assassination of Charlie Kirk is one of his, at one of his campus debates, is a reminder that the culture that normalized violent protests is one step away from far worse tragedies. So you're hearing more and more about Satan the devil and his demon army, and you're hearing more and more about spiritual warfare. And you're also hearing a lot more about the oncoming civil war, whether it's the U.S. or Britain. We're doing this to ourselves. His murder has been something of a Rorschach test for politicians, pundits, and social media posters. While most agree that this is a compelling reason for everyone to stop demonizing their political foes, we already know that won't happen. If two attempted assassinations of President Donald Trump last year haven't prevented his opponents on the left from continuing to smear him as another Hitler, and therefore logically fair game for violence, what makes anyone think that the gunning down of a young man who leaves behind a wife and two small children will sober anyone up? And we've seen it over the last week. Will Cain at Fox News, he's the one that broke the news last week because the assassination happened while his show was going on. Play clip two.
It has been 1 week since the assassination of Charlie Kirk. We had the horrible job of bringing you that news of his death here 1 week ago on this show together. Here we are, a week later. And some of the reaction online and in the media is downright unfathomable. We are seeing a media irredeemably broken. What we hope we do not see at this point is an irredeemably broken United States.
That's a strong warning. I mean, that's a big statement. Broken. The media is gone. They're broken. I mean, the tables have turned in some respects. You see it with the not-so-funny man that got fired yesterday as well because of what he said about Charlie Kirk and President Trump on Monday's show, I think it was. And now his show's over. I mean, who could have imagined this a couple years ago? There is a cancel culture that the radical left doesn't like at all. I don't think I'll have time to play some of the reaction to that late night comedian that got fired yesterday, or at least his show is suspended. But that said, I mean, at the same time, you know, he's on his way out and he's basically saying, I'm not going to apologize. Of course not. Kirk was a white supremacist. Kirk was evil. He had it coming. He didn't say those things, but that's basically what you, the message you get if you read between the lines. And there's a lot more like that online. And in top powerful positions as well. You've heard the clips this week on the show. Shocking. The reaction to murder. People cheering for murder. This is where we are in America today. Kirk's prove me wrong events are now being widely described as provocations by those who opposed his stands. To the political left, the open expression of anti-abortion, anti-open borders, pro-guns, and pro-Israel advocacy on campuses remains an affront to their sensibilities and to academia itself, where such views are rarely heard. You don't talk about those subjects, certainly not on the university campus. I mean, the campuses are controlled by the Marxist professors. That's their territory. And so if you're Charlie Kirk, you either stay away or we gun you down. And that's what they did. And people celebrated. Classrooms, entire classrooms of young people celebrated. Put into perspective, that makes it clear that his killing isn't just one more sign that vocal advocacy can be a dangerous profession. It's also a warning that society is heading toward a reality in which all those who speak up for any cause that falls out of favor with the chattering class, like that of Israel in opposition to anti-Semitism, can no longer think of themselves as safe from violence. The land of the free. Freedom, I mean, that's what Charlie Kirk had emblazoned on his T-shirt the day he was murdered. Freedom. That makes the cause of free speech that Charlie Kirk championed, as well as the need to stop demonizing our political foes, not merely a matter of civility in public discourse. It's a matter of life and death for American democracy. I mean, here the radical left in the lead up to the election last year, they were screaming that if Trump gets back in office, it's the death of democracy. And look at how they're trying to kill the democracy. Look at how they're trying to assassinate free speech. And they're going to get what they want, sadly, because civil war is coming. This other article, I'll get to it in a moment if I have time. What's the title? The reaction to Charlie Kirk's murder proves America is closer than ever to its next civil war. That's from The Independent. Now, you listened to the Dear Leader yesterday as he's up there on stage, his legs crossed, and he's holding that microphone. He's trying to tell the crowd when it's appropriate not to laugh or when it's appropriate to cheer. And then saying how peaceful he is. And how he united the country. Listen to clip 19.
Obviously, I didn't know Charlie Kirk. I was generally aware of some of his ideas. I think those ideas were wrong. But that doesn't negate the fact that what happened was a tragedy and that I mourn for him and his family. He's a young man with two small children and a wife who obviously, and a huge number of friends and supporters who cared about him. And so we have to extend grace to people during their period of mourning and shock. We can also, at the same time, say that I disagree with the idea that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a mistake. That's not me politicizing the issue. It's making an observation about who are we as a country. I can say that I disagree with the suggestion that my wife or Justice Jackson does not have adequate brain processing power. I can say that I disagree that Martin Luther King was awful. I can disagree with some of the broader suggestions of that liberals and Democrats are promoting a conspiracy to displace whites and replace them by ushering in illegal immigrants. Those are all topics that we have to be able to discuss.
There you go. We have to extend grace to this young man who was a racist, a misogynist. He hated immigrants. But, you know, I can bring those things up. They're just good topics. It's all part of the conversation. Wouldn't it be nice to see him once, just one time, in a setting where there's a host? I don't know who hosted this event, who the guy is next to him. Where one individual would have the courage to challenge him. Well, have you actually looked into what he said about Martin Luther King? And have you considered his wife and the way he promotes human life and values in the family? You're really saying he's a racist? Charlie Kirk is a racist, and that he hates women, and that he says or believes that women are inferior to men? You see, those that followed Charlie Kirk, they know those are lies. They know it. They know it. I saw a clip from a black woman. She said, you know, I listened to Charlie Kirk for the last 7 years religiously. I never heard him say one racist thing. But try telling that to the dear leader. He knows. He knows. Will worship. Play clip 20.
I have to recognize that on both sides, undoubtedly, there are people who are extremists and who say things that are contrary to what I believe are America's core values. But I will say that those extreme views were not in my White House. I wasn't embracing them. I wasn't empowering them. I wasn't putting the weight of the United States government behind extremist views. And that is when we have the weight of the United States government behind extremist views, we've got a problem.
Nice try. No, you extremists on both sides, and here I am in the middle. And when I was in the White House, I was the moderate. You ever notice these extremists? They never see their views as extreme because they worship their own opinions. They have their truth. And anyone that's far to the left or far to the right of their truth, well, they're extreme, okay. But I'm perfect. I am God. That's the spirit. That's the spirit behind it. The Sky News Australia had, I think she hosts a program on Blaze TV. And she went down through some of the history of this divider in chief that you just heard from. Skip ahead to clip 4.
I would say that Barack Obama is known here in America as the divider in chief. I mean, he, of course, he wants to talk about extremist views. He wants to paint a cutesy little picture of how he was when he was president. Let me remind you of some names, Rita. How about Reverend Jeremiah Wright, the same, the chickens have come home to roost man that, of course, he made that remark shortly after 9/11. How about Louis Farrakhan, who they had to, the campaign had to, of course, hide pictures of Barack Obama and Louis Farrakhan together during the campaign because they knew that it would hurt him. How about Bill Ayers, a man whose home President Obama once visited to announce that he was running for office. This is the same domestic terrorist of this country in Weather Underground. I mean, these are extremist people Obama has always surrounded himself with. So it's very cute that he wants to play a little bit of revisionist history. Let me give you one more stat here, Rita. Mm-hmm. When it comes to racial division, which of course Barack Obama was great at, when it comes to racial division, when he was elected, America thought that race relations were good or very good. Overwhelmingly, the majority of Americans thought that. It was 70% of whites, 61% of blacks said as much. After he left office, it plunged to under 50% for whites and under 40% of blacks. So it's very interesting to watch Barack Obama, the divider in chief, sit there up on his high horse, you know, living in Martha's Vineyard, telling us that he was never an extremist.
Facts are stubborn things. It's amazing to see the devil at work. Just trying to scrub the history, even when it was just a few years ago. We're old enough to remember it. All these police officers getting gunned down. He launched his presidential campaign inside the home of a domestic terrorist. That tells you everything you need to know. Listen to the Sky News host as she comments on Obama's speech yesterday, or his discussion, clip five.
The Obama administration was guilty of weaponizing the Justice Department, various other government bodies to go after their political opponents, Sarah. And as you said, he personally championed the toxic doctrine of identity politics. The impact of that has been, well, it's being felt today. It'll probably be felt for decades to come.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, he, of course, we had the IRS go after conservatives under Barack Obama. They spied on Fox News reporters under Barack Obama. He, of course, was the one who spied on President Trump's campaign that we found out about later. Everyone called President Trump a conspiracy theorist because he said the Barack Obama administration is spying on me. It turns out he was right all along. I mean, this is a man who knows how to play dirty politics. In fact, I would argue that he was the one that was in charge of playing dirty politics under the Biden regime. And notice, Rita, I call it a regime because that's what it was under both Biden and Barack Obama. It is just really, really disgusting to listen to these people try to act like this type of political violence is happening on both sides. It is not happening on both sides. It is overwhelmingly not only happening on the left side, but it is also embraced by all of these left-wing lunatics.
That's right. And they joke about it. And at least, I forget the parent company for ABC, but at least they suspended the not-so-funny man. It's a little bit of a different climate. But then you have this assassination, and you see there's no repentance or remorse. There's no moment for reflection, even. There's no toning down the rhetoric. It's, if anything, it's being ramped up, even as we speak. The reaction to a politically motivated assassination that happened just a week ago, that tells you everything you need to know. Listen to one more from the Dear Leader yesterday, clip 21.
When I was president, in the aftermath of tragedies, when Dylann Roof went into a black church and, based on his own words, shot a group of folks who were engaged in Bible study and who had invited him in. And according to him, it was for racist reasons. As president of the United States, my response was not who may have influenced this troubled young man to engage in that kind of violence, and now let me go after my political opponents and use that.
Translation, Trump is going after the political opponents. He's using a tragedy for political purposes. I never did that. Well, we just played the spiel there from Breitbart. It was all through his administration. It was all through to last summer Right up until the point that he was silenced, he still makes an appearance here and there, but just doesn't quite have the mojo he once had, does he? Because people know. He posts one thing online, and just look at the comments. Look at the comments. This was a tweet from just today. After years of complaining about cancel culture, this is Obama, the dear leader, the current administration has taken it to a new and dangerous level by routinely threatening regulatory action against media companies unless they muzzle or fire reporters and commentators it doesn't like. I mean, they are over at MSNBC. I mean, this is definitely Hitlerian. You can't blot out Jimmy Kimmel. These are the people that blotted out Donald Trump 4 years ago. I had no voice, Trump said to Lee Smith. I had no Twitter. I had no Facebook. I had nothing. I had no way to get the message out. That's why Donald Trump went off and created Truth Social. He couldn't trust any of these people to be champions of free speech. I mean, Charlie Kirk was, he was critical of Donald Trump for suggesting that they need to clamp down on the anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrations on the university campus. And the reason why? Because he felt like they should be free to speak their mind, just like I should be free to speak my mind. Well, I think some university campuses could use a crackdown. If you're out there supporting Hamas, you have to wonder how much love there is, if any, for the United States of America. Leave aside Judah for a moment. There's certainly no love for Jews. We know that. But where's the love for your own country, your own nation? Gunned down in cold blood, the reaction to Charlie Kirk's murder proves America is closer than ever to its next civil war. This man writes, the most terrifying aspect of the current reality of the U.S. is not the assassination of the 31-year-old Trump activist, but how people have responded, writes Stephen March, author of The Next Civil War. As the sense of collective mourning no longer applies, this is a turning point for what comes next. That's right. That's what this show is all about. You know, what's coming next? Where are we headed now? What will America be like 6 months from now? Is the violent rhetoric, is that going to be toned down a bit, or is it going to be worse? Are there going to be more assassinations or more assassination attempts? Or is that over? The fallout is utterly predictable. Divided America will divide further. I mean, that's the truth. There's no getting around that. These are not good signs. Political violence, already surging, will surge further. America will continue further down the road to the perdition of the republic. And it says here, when I published The Next Civil War in 2022, the experts on civil war and assassination I spoke with were clear with me. What is uniquely dangerous about the current moment of the U.S. or that the U.S. faces is not the political violence itself, but the collective reaction to it. As I say, America is not a stranger to political violence. But when it happens, you know, there were times in our history where it would at least bring the country together. For a time, after 9/11, it didn't last for very long, but at least there was a moment. Not now. Not now. Now you've got the dear leader out there saying, you know, my administration, unlike the one that's currently there, I mean, we were peacemakers. We weren't extremists. He was the extremist in chief. He was the divider in chief. And he speaks like an angel of light. Where do we go from here? And what happens next? These are the questions that everyone should be asking. And you've got many of the answers right here in this book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You've got it in my father's book on the Ezekiel, the prophet Ezekiel's message. And of course, more broad than that, you've got all the answers in Mystery of the Ages. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in Broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. And there is one more show this week. That will be tomorrow.